Gospel of the Lord. So the story of Peter and John continues. So 2 days ago there was the healing, yesterday there was the teaching, and today we get the consequences. And it's good to see that, as I was mentioning, that the mission of the apostles mirrors what Jesus does during his ministry, but it's not always the same thing. Because first and foremost, you're not dealing with the Son of God, you're dealing with adopted children of God who now share in Jesus' mission, but they are by no means the source of their ministry. And this is something that Peter and John and the apostles and the church throughout the centuries will take a tremendous pain to be able to emphasize. And this is what they preach, that Jesus has healed him. It's quite the line. It's very encouraging. And it's also very upsetting, especially if you happen to be Annas and Caiaphas, who were at Jesus' trial, who condemned him to death, and now you don't want to look bad. I'm pretty sure any one of us, when we've done a screw-up, minor one of whatever sort, and then all of a sudden our boss, our spouse, our friends call us on it, then we can come up with any number of explanations as to why what we did was entirely justifiable. Because the last pill we want to swallow is to go to our relatives who have the permanent capacity of saying, remember that time, remember that time, remember that time, remember that time, for the rest of time. You don't want to listen to them. They become incredibly annoying. This is why people stop calling their families, because they don't want to have their screw-ups brought up before their face. But of course, if we live in fear of having our screw-ups brought in before our face, then that will enslave us. And this is where Annas and Caiaphas and the rest of the high priests happen to be situating themselves. But they got themselves in this particular situation because of an initial hardness of heart. When Caiaphas declared that Jesus should die, he did not say that Jesus is pretending to be the Messiah. In fact, what he said was, all these people are going to believe in him, and our way of life is going to end, so this is the politically expedient move. It is better that one man die than the nation. This is in the Gospel of John, right before the Passion narrative. And so here we see a particular problem that faces all of us. They saw the miracles and power and works and wonders that Jesus performed, and they chose not to believe. This is important. They chose not to believe. And the same thing happens today. They see a wonder, an act of power done by these foolish fishermen. And again, they'll seek over and over again to find an explanation for what happened in any other source. The best example of this particular hardness of heart is found in the story of the man born blind in the Gospel of John. They constantly say to him, how can you see now? And they're like, he just says, I told you, it was Jesus. How many times? No, he didn't actually know it was Jesus. He says, there was this guy, he came up to me, he healed me. But what happens is because they're so desperate for it to be something other than Jesus, that they'll come up with any explanation they want. And sadly, this is usually what a culture that rebels against its Christian heritage also does. To be able to attach any evil done to Christianity, and then any good that is done to something else. And they will work desperately, desperately to be able to explain away, and the best example is the 20th century. The 20th century represents one of the most amazing apostasies of Christian history. And yet, Nazism and all of these things are not explained as Christians who are half-hearted and not living the gospel fully, but as Christians who are living the gospel and therefore do these things. We must be very aware and cognizant of what is happening to us when we have that one small reservation and then what it leads us to do in the future. Christ has risen. He has given his ministry of service and love to the church. This means that we surrender our life to it. And you see, Peter and the rest of the apostles in today's resurrection narrative giving us a pattern in terms of what the opposite behavior is like. God did not choose Peter because he's smart. And we know this because Peter has reminded us of this. He has told the church repeatedly. If you read the Gospels again and again, the primary source of the Gospels are the apostles themselves. Peter has no problem whatsoever. Like, if he calls other people to account, rest assured he calls himself to account. He's like, I denied the Lord. I was a fool. I didn't understand what he was saying. In fact, in so many ways, I was impetuous. And the worst judgment that Jesus laid on a single living person was not to the Pharisees, it was to me. He said, get behind me, Satan. The worst he called the Pharisees was whitewashed tombs. So the judgment always comes down, in a sense, harder on the church, but the difference is the response. The difference is the attitude. Peter is on the boat, and he's had a miserable day. And a stranger says, do it again. They don't know it's Jesus. A stranger says, do it again. And if we've screwed up something, the last thing we want to do is revisit the screw-up. If we broke up with a girl, we don't want to hang out in her neighborhood. We will do everything we can to avoid that neighborhood. And he says, do the thing you'd already done, but slightly differently. And they catch fish. But it shows the humility of Peter in that he is willing to do it. Immediately after, when it becomes clear that the one who spoke to them is the Lord, he barely puts his clothes on. I don't understand why he's fishing naked. Maybe there's ropes or something and he doesn't want to get anything caught. I'm sure he was wearing some kind of undergarment for the sake of his friends. But he just dives right in. This is a crazy person. But a holy man. Because he knows who calls him. And he knows, therefore, it's important to just dive. The way in which we prevent ourselves from being a Caiaphas is not believing. People have this insane notion that fundamentalists and religious zealots believe. They don't. They don't believe. That's why they resort to violence. If you believe the God of the universe is calling you to tenderness, then you don't need to resort to violence. Because he who made the world is with you. And there is nothing the world can do to you that will have a permanent effect. That is why Jesus doesn't even bother responding to his interlocutors. This is why the church always must be able to proclaim the resurrection in peaceful joy. Because they can't touch you if this is united to him. And importantly, as we discussed and saw yesterday, the resurrection is not merely spiritual. Jesus eats with his friends, articulating something that we need to recapture. That if there is anything good in the human heart, it will be raised up. There is no part of you that God does not seek to redeem. With such a good God, before you, behind you, above you, behind all those different spaces. Dive in, man. Woman. Dive in. It's worth it. And at the risk of sounding cheap, living the gospel is fun.